Concerned citizens gathered on the lawn of Town Hall last week to rally against the lack of a permanent shelter in Creston. The group, mostly supporters of the Den Society, were impassioned by a recent panel series presented at the local library called When Homelessness Hits Close to Home. The discussions aimed to provide more information on the issue in Creston, with perspectives from local experts. While the Den Society and its volunteers have continued to provide support, food, services and human kindness to Creston's unhoused, as well as information and education to the community at large, we are still unable to establish a shelter without the cooperation and engagement of the Town of Creston staff and council, said Nancy DeVuono, board chair. There are many folks still living outdoors and some are being hounded from place to place by the Town of Creston on a daily basis. Access to shelter is a human right. Housing becomes an issue. On May 24, the first of the panel series provided more local context, such as when housing concerns first began to surface in the community back in 2007. After a community forum, the Creston Valley Community Housing Society, CVCHS, was founded to address these issues the following year. 17 years later, longtime member Heather Moore reflects on how far the community has come, and how far it still has to go. Moore's journey into housing advocacy began after her time working with the Kootenai Community Center Society on domestic and gender-based violence. "It was so obvious that to solve any of our problems, we need a safe place to stay," she said. "A safe, healthy, affordable place, because otherwise nothing good happens." Since then, CVCHS has helped build two housing complexes totaling 15 units and also currently operates a 6-unit family building. They rely heavily on volunteers, community donations, and partnerships with local agencies to keep it running. "It operates barely on a break-even basis," said Moore. "We're 100% responsible for all the expenses, the repairs. It works because we have very dedicated volunteers who help us keep costs down and because we have a very generous community." They aim to house people with significant financial barriers, who are in need of more support. "We might receive 15 applications for one apartment," Moore said. "They're generally single mothers or families who are living in situations where they're paying far more than their 30%, which is what the government deems to be an appropriate amount for rent. They're paying 50, 60, 70% of their income, and you can't live like." Creston, once a low-cost town, has experienced gentrification and a sharp increase in housing demand, especially after COVID, when remote workers sought out its scenic surroundings. But as property values rose, many affordable units were lost. "Many of the places where marginalized people used to stay have disappeared," Moore said, citing former apartments above Casey's, for example. "It's part of the process of gentrification. And now we're a high-rent, low-income town." The CVCHS continues to push for new developments and is close, for the umpteenth time, more jokes, to final project approval for an 18-unit family housing complex. "We've helped people get through medical crises. We've helped young moms get educations, better jobs, and move on," Moore said. "It's such important work." While the society's mandate is to build and manage housing, not provide direct support for people currently living unhoused, several dedicated board members got involved with the efforts to form a new group, the Creston Valley Den Society. Filling the gaps. Karen Shannon, the Den's treasurer and manager of Trinity Treasures Thrift Store, has been part of the journey from the beginning. In the early months of 2024, she and other volunteers helped operate Creston's first emergency shelter inside the former ambulance hall. "It was always going to be a short-term thing," she said. "Our congregation is older, and it was exhausting. So then came the Den Society, as most of us wanted to back up and let a governing group take it over." When the ambulance building became available, the Den submitted a proposal. But despite promising early discussions with the town of Creston, they never received a formal yes or no by BC Housing's funding deadline. "It seemed like a perfect location for us," said Shannon. "We were actually never turned down by the town. They just let the funding run out." Without a shelter space, the den pivoted to running a drop-in center for meals and supporting the outdoor encampment, complete with tents, electricity access, and other essentials. It was just so sad that's where they ended up, outside the building where they could sleep inside the year before, and it was empty, said Shannon. We decided, okay, let's do everything we possibly can to take the desperation out of the unhoused lives. So we provide food, support, and a little bit of compassion. Today, the drop-in center runs 6 days a week, supported by about 50 volunteers and a recently hired outreach worker. It's become a hub for local service agencies to connect directly with those in need. If we want to keep our clients alive, including the ones that use drugs, then we have to feed them. We have to keep them as healthy as possible. And they need to know someone in this community actually cares about them, Shannon said. She emphasized progress can't happen without broader community support and political will. The town is still in meetings with BC Housing, and we're not even allowed at the table, Shannon said. I don't see hope unless the community starts getting active and says, enough, we actually do care about this. Working but still struggling. According to the numbers behind the local food bank, even working and making an income sometimes isn't enough to make ends meet. 6 years ago, Bobby Joe Fay started volunteering at the Creston Valley Gleaners Society's food bank. She quickly fell in love with the work. Today she coordinates all of it, food services, logistics, and the complex dance of feeding hundreds of local families who rely on gleaners for support. And the need has only grown. Open 2 days a week. Gleaners currently serves around 1,100 individuals through its food bank, 300 of them children. Over the past year alone, they've seen more than 8,500 visits, a 27% increase from the year before. During the pandemic, when the need jumped up 35%, the majority of our recipients say they are one paycheck away from being unhoused, said Fay. They are struggling, and we all know what groceries are like these days. In March, during the annual hunger count submitted to Food Banks Canada, 115 children and 377 adults accessed the food bank over 30 days. Fay says that month is typical. We have seen such an increase in families coming to access the food bank, said Fay. And in those families, both parents are working full-time jobs. They're all working to pay to keep the roof over their heads, and a lot of them are not succeeding at even that. When the Gleaners store is open, Fay frequently hears comments from the public questioning who deserves to use the food bank. You hear things like, why do they have a nice car, she said. Well, I'm one of these people. Yes, I drive a nice truck. Because it was easier to get into those hefty payments than to find the cash to buy a vehicle. People borrow cars from neighbors or family just to get here. Please, until you've walked in their shoes, don't judge. Of the households Gleaners serves, 200 are on social assistance, 150 receive disability benefits, 90 rely on old age pension, and over 70 people have no income at all. And there are 174 food bank users who identify as unhoused. For a place the size of Creston, that's not okay, Fay said. There's a long list of what is included as unhoused. That is people staying wherever they can, on a couch, in their car. Those sort of things. But it's not just about numbers. It's about shame, fear, and stigma, barriers as real as the cost of groceries. A lot of people think that to be able to use the food bank, there's income barriers, said Fay. If you need food, food banks are there to help, and we've tried to make it quick, easy, and welcoming for people, because we all know how difficult it is for anyone to ask for help. It's a pride thing. Invisible barriers hard to overcome. That stigma extends to conversations around addiction and mental health, said Jared Basil of Yukon Nuki, Lower Kootenai Band, who works in cultural safety education with the social sector of Te Naha Nation. None of us were meant to suffer in silence but, unfortunately, we live in a society that doesn't allow us to have open, honest dialogue and humanized conversations because of the stigma, he said. Basil likens shelters and safe consumption sites to other forms of harm reduction, like seatbelts in a vehicle or hard hats in a construction zone. But if I were to tell you there are safe injection sites where people can use, that we're there to help and we're there to support in case of overdose, we view it differently, he said. It's a form of helping people. It's a form of reducing harm. Basil stressed the importance of shared humanity over differences. He asks others to approach complex issues like homelessness and addiction with compassion, understanding, and responsibility. If we can learn to focus on where we align as human beings, we can learn to develop a sense of understanding so that we can be compassionate. Then I think the conversations get easier. Especially in today's uncertain economic times, rife with political turmoil, there should be a shared responsibility to care for one another. There's times where we get fixated on our rights, but sometimes when we get fixated on our rights, it takes us away from our responsibilities, said Basil. We have a responsibility to future generations. We have a responsibility to humanity. We have a responsibility to the town of Creston. He said many of us develop biases that are taught, but we are not born with prejudices. And I think as we get older in life, we understand that part of learning in life means unlearning some things that no longer serve us, he said. Our young generations, they see the dialogue. They read the comment section. They know what's being said out there, and it hurts. Are we being the role models? Are we equipping the next generation with the tools? If letting go of judgment is too much to ask, his simplest request is, don't make it worse for others. Even if you don't feel like you can contribute meaningfully, in its simplest form, just don't make it worse for others. If we can do that, and we don't create additional barriers or challenges for people, then maybe we can impact and benefit future generations.